Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Seton, what if I told you there's a bacon, then there's number one thick cut, tastes like a touchdown in your mouth bacon?
You must be talking about Wright brand bacon, because they are not playing when it comes to the premium quality of their bacon.
It's thick cut, hand trimmed, and real wood smoke, real. And you can tell.
So why settle for average bacon when you can have the real stuff?
That's right. And if you're looking to upgrade any meal, try Wright brand bacon. That's called Wright brand bacon. You won't regret it.
Experience bacon the right way.
It is getting that time of the year. It's Miller time. You don't need a watch or a clock to tell you. It's Miller time. Weather gets a little bit warmer. All of a sudden, the beer gets a little colder.
It's beer cracking season.
Whoa, okay. I don't know if it says that on the calendar. Miller Lite, great taste, less filling, tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Patrick, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. And as always, please celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer. Miller Lite.
You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Ryan McGee, very thoughtful writer at ESPN.com, co-host of Marty and McGee, the SEC Network and ESPN Radio. And he wrote some things about what's going on with the SEC and Oklahoma, Texas. Bigger's not better here, Ryan. Did the SEC have a good week this past week?
The SEC had a great week. I mean, listen, you just said it. I co-host the show on SEC Network. I had a great week. I mean, Paul Feinbaum had a great week. You know, a lot of people had – Greg Sankey had a great week. But the question is – and this is what I worry about just in the entirety of sports whenever there's big changes, is it good for everyone else? And what made me think of this, interestingly enough, was what Nick Saban had to say a few hours before we all found out through the Houston Chronicle for the first time about Texas and Oklahoma. And he was talking about NIL, and he was talking about the transfer portal and expanded playoff. And he said, listen, all of these things benefit Alabama. But then he started talking about Kent State, where he went to school, and Toledo, where he was a head coach. And I mean, you're a Dayton guy, and Jimbo Fisher started talking about Samford. These guys worry about how this affects everyone, not just them. But at the end of the day, yeah, great for them. They said it. But the question is, 10 years from now, will this have been great for everyone?
If you got an honest answer out of Nick Saban and said, are you happy Oklahoma and Texas are in the SEC? What do you think Coach Saban would say?
Nick Saban is all about how do I get to the playoff, whether it's four teams or 12 teams or whatever. It's why every player on his team will more than likely be have a shot in their arm, a vaccination by the time they get there. He can't officially say it. That's how it's going to be. Nothing's going to stand in the way of him getting to the playoff. So if this is an obstacle to get to the playoff, then he ain't happy. But if a win against one of those teams, and he clearly is not scared of anyone, if a win against one of these teams is what's going to get him to the playoff, then he'll be all about it. But I think initially, yeah, you're looking at the schedule and you're thinking, okay, there's a week that I'm probably not going to play Mercer, you know, or even schedule Miami in the opener. You know, this is a week when I've got one of these two. So I think in the short term, he will tell you he's happy, but he's probably already trying to do the math. Like, what does this mean for me getting to January?
All right, so what's the big picture? What's the end game here for college football? Because I look at Greg Sankey as Roger Goodell and ESPN. So those two go hand in hand. But it feels like we're headed towards the NFL model in college football, where you're going to have maybe 40 schools. You're going to compete for 16 playoff spots. You're going to have conferences. You're going to have, you know, USC plays Ohio State in week one. Ohio State plays Oklahoma in week two. Like, you're going to have, and, the smaller schools are going to be relegated.
If you know your history, then you know that, you know, right across the street from where the NCAA headquarters used to be in Kansas City is the quaint little building where the NAIA lives. Well, they used to run everything. And then one day, the big schools decided to go do something else. And we've all talked about forever. Well, at what point do the Power Five or whoever the powers that be go do their own thing? Because, you know, that basketball money was still sitting over there in Indianapolis. And, you know, they're running the college football playoff by themselves. They like the NCAA being the bad guy, even though they were on all the committees. I mean, you know, the NCAA, the asylum's run by the inmates, and it was a very, very, it was a very convenient scapegoat. Well, now the question is, what are they going to do going forward? And I think you're right. I think it's either this NFL model, which I hate, by the way. NFL is great, but college is on Saturday and the NFL is on Sunday. That's why I don't like a 12-team playoff. It just feels like the NFL playoffs. It's not different. But going forward, it's either going to be what you're talking about or it's going to be what we've all predicted for a long time, which are 16-team super conferences. Now, whether that's a Power Five or a Power Four,
yeah,
I don't know. Roy Kramer, the man who created all of this, told me in 2011, he said, 14 is not the number. 16 is the number. He said, once you hit 16, that's the right number of teams. More than that's too many. Fewer than that's too few. That was 10 years ago. And, you know, as per usual, Roy Kramer seems to be right.
What happens with the Big Ten?
You're Mr. Big Ten, as Paul Feinbaum always tells me, right? Very quiet, right?
Yep.
And what have we learned about all of this? And what did we learn in 2011? And what did we learn in 1992? The people who aren't saying anything are 100% up to something. No one at the Pac-12 would have said anything about anything if they hadn't had media day just now.
Yeah.
And so everyone's being very quiet. And as you know, as Greg Sankey told us all a week ago today, the quietest person is probably the person that's up to something.
What about Notre Dame?
You know, Dan, to me, it all comes down to money. I mean, NBC has been writing a check to them for 30 years, and it's been great. The question has always been, when the money gets bigger in the conferences, and you can't ignore it. I mean, the ACC – and I was at the ACC championship game, and all those Notre Dame people were like, they're having a pretty good time to me. You know, obviously, they lost to Clemson. We all predicted that, but the experience looked great. And Coach Kelly was telling me, this is great, and we're having a great time. And it was a tryout. And per the contract, they can't go anywhere until they talk to the ACC first. That's what John Swofford wrote in that amazing contract with Notre Dame. But at the end of the day, follow the money. And if they can make as much money with their, you know, Saturday afternoon, Saturday nights on NBC, they're going to stay with that. But if the money is bigger in a conference and the payout is bigger in a conference somewhere, so it's the reason Texas and Oklahoma are doing what they're doing. So wherever the checks are bigger, they'll all end up, no matter what they tell you.
We're talking to Ryan McGee, ESPN.com senior writer, co-host of Marty and McGee on SEC Network and ESPN Radio. We got Dale Jr. on coming up final hour.
My man.
And I thought he would be interesting to talk about with just that mental pressure. You know, what happened with Simone Biles? And I know it's a completely different sport, but, you know, getting in that car, you know, the pressure he had, he wasn't winning. He inherited his dad's fan base. He got in a car the following week after, you know, Senior died at Daytona. So I'm just kind of curious his mindset, and you've known Junior a long time.
When I had the incredible honor of helping Dale write his book a few years ago, Racing to the Finish, he and I both learned so much about mental health. And we both agreed that whether it was the loss of his father or whether it was the loss of my mother in Monroe, North Carolina, around that same time, we both wished that we had known more about mental health when we experienced those things as kids. And you know, his perspective on this is amazing. And it's not just a physical injury, which is what he suffered time and time and time again, and ultimately pushed him out of the race car. But it was what you're talking about. And what we both learned, you know, through his doctor, and he'll tell you all about Mickey, is that, you know, stress and mental health is the greatest contributing factor to not being able to heal physical health. And if you go back, it's funny, you go back now and listen to what Simone Biles was saying, that's what she was saying. You know, are you putting yourself in a position to injure yourself physically, perhaps forever, because you weren't in the right mental mindset? And ultimately, that's the decision that Dale Jr. had to make about his career. So, yeah, I'll be watching and listening because I and then I'm going to call him after and talk to him about it.
Hey, I hope you're doing well. And
I'm good.
Yeah. Tell Marty.
Hey, speaking of mental health, you remember that time in the mid 90s on SportsCenter and this PA turned in a shot sheet and the handwriting was so atrocious that it created like a week of firestorm controversy on campus? Remember that on SportsCenter?
Yeah.
That was me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you taught me a great lesson about attitude that week. And I have remembered it ever since. And hopefully my attitude, my mental attitude has been better.
What was my advice?
Don't be, I think it was, when I come to you and tell you that your handwriting is atrocious, you probably should listen and not be so defensive. But in my defense, I was 23 years old. I think 6 months earlier, I was sitting in Western Civ class. So. But yeah, I go to Keith, I'm driving Keith to work and I go, man, Dan's really mad at me. He goes, yes, you should listen to what he says. And I did. So thank you for that. It worked out.
Well, you know, college grad, you thought you knew everything at ESPN.
I did. No. And I have a 16-year-old daughter now, so she knows everything. And I apply my Dan Patrick lesson to my life here at the house all the time.
So wait a minute. You so that. You had to pick up Keith from his house? And because
I drove him to work 2 or 3 days a week. Yeah. My first day as a PA, I walk into the newsroom. I've been watching you guys all throughout college. I walk in the newsroom and Keith is putting flyers in the mailboxes because the Southington Cab Company has increased its rates. And he's right. So he's looking for a ride to work. And I just come from Al Jaffe's office. I still have my tie on. And I go, are you serious? And he said, yeah. I said, what time do I pick you up tomorrow? So I drove Keith to work for the whole 2 years I was up there. Yeah. I'd be like, man, Dan's mad. Should I be worried? He goes, yes, you should be worried. You should talk to Dan and get this straightened out. I said, okay. Thank you, Keith.
You could write a book about that.
Yeah. Y'all wrote a book.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe Marty and I'll write a book one day. I'll write a chapter about driving Keith to work and the time Dan Patrick had a seminar to talk about my handwriting.
But it did make us better at SportsCenter because of your handwriting and your shot sheet. Because
that's it.
Yeah. Like, we were doing live highlights
It's
chaos. When I tell people we didn't even get to see what you were writing, I'd get it on the air live.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then I'd have to kind of figure out your hieroglyphics.
No, I knew it. So I'm literally running down the hallway and you run 20 steps, put the paper on the wall and write a shot. Run 20 steps. I run in there and slide it in there. And I knew. I literally slid it in there like this. Like this. He can't read Gary Trent's name. What am I doing here? And thankfully you were good at it. So thank you for that. Yeah. And then I would take Keith to the dry cleaner and the TCBY.
Great to talk to you, Ryan. Thank you, buddy.
Yeah. Thank you, Dan.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, everybody, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. I know what you're saying. Flag on the play. You've already talked about that. But there's just so much more good stuff in this game. In Monopoly Go, you can team up with friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. The more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock.
And there's so much more to get. You can get unique stickers. You could trade with friends to compete albums for big prizes. There's cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with. I was always a battleship guy. You know, you get those pieces. Like there was the hat. There was the shoe.
Oh, same.
There was I was always a battleship guy or the car. You know what, too, is funny about a battleship? It's one of the only Monopoly pieces that you find that's not just a household item.
Wow,
you
know I mean? Even thought about that.
Yeah, most people don't have a battleship at home, but you have a car, you have a hat, you have a shoe, you have all those things. Anyway, you could also get hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults. That's always fun. Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges. A ton include their own unique mini games like Digging for Treasure or a Robot Pachinko Machine. And there's always new timed events that will help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it for free right now on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
As you may have realized, I watch a lot of sports, like a lot. That's why I like Prime Video. It has all my live sports and docs in one app, like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey, and the National Women's Soccer League, both included with Prime. Plus, you can buy Premier Boxing or stream the NHL and NBA playoffs on Max with the Bleacher Report Sports add-on, or add Paramount Plus for the Masters on CBS. all in one app with one password. Prime Video. It's all your favorite sports in one place. Restrictions apply. Prime membership required for add-on subscriptions. See amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
It is getting that time of the year. It's Miller time. You don't need a watch or a clock to tell you. It's Miller time. Weather gets a little bit warmer. All of a sudden, the beer gets a little colder.
It's beer cracking season.
Okay. I don't know if it says that on the calendar. It's a beer that strips away everything you don't need and holds on to what matters the most. It's a light beer that tastes like beer. That's why I reach for a Miller Lite. And it's less filling, only 96 calories. They've been doing this since 1975. They have perfected it. You know, that summer afternoon, we're coming into that time of the year, be like, oh, man.
Crack one?
Yes, or two. Don't look at your watch. Don't look at the clock. Don't look at the calendar. You know. Miller Lite, the great taste, less filling, tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Patrick, or you can pretty much find it anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories, fewer carbs than premium regular beer. Miller Lite. Did you ever play the over-under game with your friends? You know, think I can eat that slice of pizza in under 30 seconds? Or, I don't know, take over a minute to down a 2-liter? Well, if you have, then you're going to love Pick 6. It's the new fantasy game from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Here's how you play it during the playoffs. Pick between 2 and 6 players and choose if they will have more or less of a stat, rebounds, points, assists, and more. Also, you track your picks, play against others for a shot to win at some big cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now. Use the promo code DPSHOW for a chance to win huge cash prizes. That's code DPSHOW only on DraftKings Pick 6. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date list of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Make way for Bob Costas, the Hall of Fame broadcaster. HBO's back on the record with Bob Costas. That will make its debut this Friday night at 11 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. It can also be streamed on HBO Max. Each episode features extended conversations with some of the biggest names in sports, from present-day superstars to legends of the past. Bob joins us now. So who's the first guest on Friday night, Bob?
Well, it's an obvious get, you might say, but Charles Barkley is the leadoff, and the difference between this, we hope, and how you see him on TNT, where it's so terrific with Ernie and the gang, is that this will be a more extended conversation. I'm sure a lot of it will be very funny. Almost inevitably, it'll be provocative. So we'll have that, and then we have Ali Raisman, which turns out to be even more timely than we thought when we booked it. We'll have a closing essay and commentary. Bomani Jones is a regular on the show. He'll be part of a 3-person panel every show. The other two people this time are Renee Montgomery, the former WNBA star who's now a part owner of the Atlanta Dream in the league, and David Cohn, the Yankee pitcher, to talk about a former Yankee pitcher, now broadcaster, to talk about a lot of what's going on in baseball.
What are you looking for in this show?
You know, the name pretty much says it. Back on the record. We're not reinventing anything. I did the On the Record show from 01 through 08 on HBO, and then when the Baseball Network came into existence, they wanted me to be part of that, and baseball is my favorite sport, so I wanted to do it. And HBO at that time said, hey, we want you to stay, but you got to choose. So I chose the baseball and reluctantly left HBO behind. Otherwise, I would have just stayed indefinitely. Now things have changed a little bit. They invited me back. I'm only doing 4 of them a year. At this point, Dan, you know, you're working 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. That's not my ideal situation anymore. So it's supposed to be quarterly. We got pushed back a couple of times by COVID. So we'll do one a month for the next 4 months just to get the 4 in for 2021. Then next year we'll go on a quarterly cycle. And I think the idea is HBO already has real sports. It's the 60 minutes of sports. It's fantastic on its own terms. We're not trying to replicate that, not trying to replicate what we see on a daily or weekly basis on cable TV sports coverage. I just hope that on its own terms, it's good. I hope that there's some depth to it, some entertainment to it. I hope it brings to bear some of the things I've done reasonably well over the course of my career.
Who is your favorite guest from On the Record?
Well, the one they talk about the most is Vince McMahon. It was good television, HBO, no commercials, and it was live. It turned out to be 27, 28 minutes of unremitting tension. And then after he went storming off the set, all we had was like a 20-second bumper to get me to the next setup on the set. So I walk over and sit down, and the next guest is Bob Knight. And I said, Coach, this is the one and only time in your life when your presence will lower the temperature in the room.
Did you think Vince McMahon was going to hit you?
No. No, I knew he was obviously, you know, getting very, very angry. That was authentic. He was very, very angry. And I think he was trying to intimidate me through body language and jabbing a finger at me. But, you know, maybe I'm just dumb. But I never thought he was going to smack me. Okay, so now he goes storming off. And you know how heavy the doors are to a studio.
Yeah.
He slammed that thing as if it was a screen door on your back porch in Mayberry. I mean, you could hear the thing reverberate. And so now the show is over, and the stage manager and some of the cameramen and then come up, hey, Bob, if he had jumped you, we had your back. Wait a minute. You're over here behind a mile of cable. I'm 6 inches from this madman.
Can you watch the Olympics as a fan now?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I watch it casually, just like I did the 2018 Winter Games from Pyeongchang. I'm interested not only in some of the competition, but in how my former colleagues and longtime friends are doing. I've texted a few of them before and during the games, but I'm not obsessed with it. I'm not sitting there monitoring it. If I plop down on the couch and something's going on, then I check it out.
And of all the great things you did with the Olympics, and I'm sure pink eye, conjunctivitis still comes up, certainly in the time of the Olympics, how often does it come up?
It comes up pretty frequently, and I know it's part of my obituary, and in the darker recesses of the internet, there are bizarre theories as to how I contracted it, none of which are remotely true, you know, but you have to have a sense of humor about it. At the time, I tried to just, you know, acknowledge it. You had to. If you just felt lousy, you go to work. We've all done that. If I had a broken leg, it would have been in a cast under the desk, wouldn't have to refer to it. But it was literally written right there on my face. So I just tried to have a line or two to acknowledge it and then move on as best I could. But the amazing thing is that some people think that I am subject to illness, and specifically pink eye, only during the Olympics. So we go from 2014 to 2016 in Rio, and it's like, Bob, how are your eyes? What is it, only during that specific quadrennial period that I'm going to get pink eye?
Wait, do you have it this week? You didn't get it this week.
No.
Okay. Okay.
No. I think I pulled a hamstring getting out of bed, but apart from that.
When you know the results and it's tape delayed, but do you have to, can you present it, or is the feeling to present it in a way that, hey, I'm going to act as if I don't know what happened?
No, I think what we always tried to do was acknowledge on the first night of competition, not the opening ceremony, but the first night of full competition, if it was the circumstance where all of it had to be presented on tape or a substantial amount, you acknowledge that, and then you try and use the right tense instead of is going for his or her second gold medal, was going for his or her second gold medal. I'm sure there were unintentional slip-ups occasionally, but you try to let them know up front, this is what it is. You don't reiterate it every night because some people want to experience it as they're watching it, if not as it happens. We hear that all the time. If you don't want to know the result, turn away. But now as the world has changed a whole lot since my first Olympics in 1988, we know that millions and millions of people are aware of what's happened. But millions more still just want to see it with the full presentation, with the backstories and the features and everything else. The most extreme was Sydney in 2000, where you're literally a world away. And some of the events that I was leading into, the next day, not only did I know the result, I had attended them the night before, and I'm reading about them in the Sydney newspapers as I'm in the car on the way to the studio. So I felt then as if I was on the History Channel.
You didn't have a cutaway of you in the crowd where you then commented on you being in the crowd while you were hosting the Olympics, did you?
You know, I was not bright enough to demand that. That would have been very amusing, but it didn't happen.
How often have you doubted yourself when you're broadcasting?
You know, I don't want to get too deeply into this, but when you're doing play-by-play, in my case, baseball now, and you get into your 60s, you have to realize that unless you really watch it, you're not exactly as sharp as you used to be. You know, during COVID, before there were any games, both the NBA network and the baseball network were showing classic games. And I would stumble across some of them. In fact, I think it was on your show, Dan, when Al Michaels and I were on at the same time.
Yeah.
And Al said, I'm on three networks at once, football, baseball, and NBA games. And on occasion, I was on at least two at once. And then YouTube tosses stuff out there, stuff you don't even remember doing or haven't thought about in a long time. And I contrast the level of sharpness from the 80s and 90s. You know, I think I'm still pretty sharp, but is there a fall off that at least I can recognize from maybe 100% to 92% or 93% on occasion? Yeah. And so maybe like a pitcher whose stuff has changed but can still be effective, you change your approach a little bit. So I have to be careful. And the other thing that's happened is, you know, your eyesight isn't quite as good as you get older. And so in baseball, unlike basketball or something, that wouldn't affect me much. In baseball, you're calling the game. You got a monitor in the booth. But if there's a long fly ball to the outfield and you're recessed from the backstop, by I don't know how many feet, but you're probably at that point 600, 700 feet away. With the naked eye, you can't 100% trust yourself on the flight of the ball. So you got to go off the monitor. So I tend to slow things down a little bit rather than just kind of jumping on it right away. I try to be a little bit more cautious. What a boring answer, but you asked.
But then you have the luxury of a Shohei Ohtani home run where you don't have to go, I don't know if that's going to get out of here.
Yeah, right.
can you remember, and you've been at the ballpark all your life, but the sound is different, Bob, with Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, there have been through the years a handful of hitters for whom that applies. I remember the late, great Buck O'Neill talking about that and saying when he closed his eyes, he knew it was Babe Ruth or Josh Gibson, the other one he cited from the Negro Leagues, and then later on Mickey Mantle, and then after that Bo Jackson. I think Shohei is on that short list where literally if you turn your back during batting practice, the sound coming off their bats was different.
Yeah, I would go. You could go and just listen to batting practice with Ohtani and be entertained. You don't even have to watch because I love the, it's in your mind like, oh my God, where's that gone? It's like radio. If you listen, that you just hear the crack of the bat and it's just, it's Seton, do you have Shohei Ohtani's home run from last night? Let's see if we can. Okay, here you go. It sounds like it's out of a cartoon, doesn't it?
It sure does. And, you know, people talk about the launch angle approach, and some are critical of it because it's part of what's created these three perfect outcomes, strikeout, walk, home run, deprives baseball of action. But when you have someone who's perfected it, if Ted Williams saw Shohei Ohtani, he would approve of Shohei's approach. It is a perfect natural uppercut swing, but he also excels at putting the ball in play. I mean, here's a guy who'll pitch six innings for you, maybe six shutout innings. I haven't checked recently, but at one point he led the league in triples. He steals bases. Mm-hmm. He does everything.
Is he better than Babe Ruth?
So difficult to compare. Ruth, when he was primarily pitching, was one of the great pitchers of his time and would have made the Hall of Fame as a pitcher. And then when he became primarily a hitter, almost exclusively, he dominated the league in a way that no one else has in baseball. It's comparable to Wilt Chamberlain averaging 50 in basketball, or Wayne Gretzky's gap over everyone else in goals, assists, and total points. Before the rest of baseball sort of caught up, Ruth was hitting more home runs than entire teams. So, but he never blended hitting and pitching at this level of effectiveness the way Ohtani did. So you can make a case for Ohtani looking at it from that perspective, another case for Ruth from the other perspective, and then you just have to say, wait a minute. You know, comparing eras and the circumstances under which they competed makes it an interesting parlor game, but you can never arrive at a definitive answer.
You remember your first game in person?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, I got to give two answers to this. My dad, I don't know if he was prescient or it was just luck. In 1957, I'm 5 years old, he took me to a game at Ebbets Field, so I can say I went to a game at Ebbets Field. I don't remember anything except how green the grass was, and you've heard people tell that story all the time. It's like Dorothy arriving in Oz, and it goes from black and white to color, because all anybody had then was a black and white television set with a tiny screen. I don't remember any particulars of the game. He also took me to one at the Polo Grounds, and as I'm sitting on his shoulders toward the back of the grandstand, he said to me, "Bobby, look at that player right there. No, no, not that one. The one in the middle. That's Willie Mays." As if he was farsighted enough to know that that would be something I'd want to remember for the rest of my life. As if he was saying, son, that's the Washington Monument. That's the Eiffel Tower. That's Willie Mays. But I don't remember any particulars of the game. The game I remember, I was seven, and my dad took me to a late season game between the Orioles and the Yankees at the old Yankee Stadium. And I was heartbroken that Mantle didn't play that day. And the Orioles won the game 7-2. And back then, you could leave. They'd let the fans leave by walking around the warning track. And then they'd open up the bullpen gates, and you poured out into the street where the elevated subway was. So we walk around, and it's awe-inspiring enough, the old Yankee Stadium, the wedding cake facade, the three decks of the whole thing. But then the monuments, and there were only three of them at that time, the monuments were on the field because center field was 461 feet from home plate. So the three monuments to Ruth, Gehrig, and their manager, Miller Huggins, are right there with the flagpole behind it. And we get to the monuments, and what would any seven-year-old kid think? I thought they were buried there on the warning track. I honestly thought, Dan, this was the sacred Yankee burial ground, and Joe DiMaggio would be interred there, and eventually, and this is the part that really got to me, Mickey Mantle was going to be buried there. And I started to cry. My father's trying to assure me, yeah, these three guys are dead, but they're buried someplace else. So.
Given the craziness of this, you know, sports collection, business, how valuable are your baseball cards, your Mickey Mantle card?
You know, the one that I save is from 1958, the first one I remember getting out of a Topps pack of Topps bubblegum cards. I imagine that one's worth, since it's in pretty good condition, somewhere in the single digits in the thousands, maybe 4,000 or 5,000.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, a mint condition 1952 Mantle, there was a big story recently in Sports Illustrated about this. Those are going into the millions of dollars.
Bob has got his new show. It's old show, just it's a newer version of his older show. It's called Back on the Record with Bob Costas. That'll be coming up this Friday night at 11 Eastern, 11 Pacific. Charles Barkley will sit down with him. Back on the Record with Bob Costas. Great to have you back on the show, Bob. Thanks for joining us as always, and good luck with the program.
Thanks a lot, Dan. See ya.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, everybody, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. I know what you're saying. Flag on the play. You've already talked about that. But there's just so much more good stuff in this game. In Monopoly Go, you can team up with friends for time tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. The more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock.
And there's so much more to get. You can get unique stickers. You could trade with friends to compete albums for big prizes. There's cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with. I was always a battleship guy. You know, you get those pieces, like there was the hat, there was the shoe.
Oh, same.
There was I was always a battleship guy or the car. You know what, too, is funny about a battleship? It's one of the only Monopoly pieces that you find that's not just a household item.
Wow, you know, I mean, even thought about that.
Yeah, most people don't have a battleship at home, but you have a car, you have a hat, you have a shoe, you have all those things. Anyway, you could also get hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults. That's always fun. Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges. A ton include their own unique mini games like digging for treasure or a robot Pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that will help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it for free right now on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
As you may have realized, I watch a lot of sports. Like, a lot. That's why I like Prime Video. It has all my live sports and docs in one app, like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey, and the National Women's Soccer League, both included with Prime. Plus, you can buy Premier Boxing or stream the NHL and NBA playoffs on Max with the Bleacher Report sports add-on, or add Paramount Plus for the Masters on CBS. All in one app with one password. Prime Video. It's all your favorite sports in one place. Restrictions apply. Prime membership required for add-on subscriptions. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
We spent a lot of time yesterday and part of today talking about Simone Biles. Took herself out of the team competition. She has taken herself out of the individual all-around competition. That will be Thursday. Don't know if she's going to compete over the weekend. And we thought about Dale Jr. For a variety of reasons. We love having Jr. on. By the way, season 2 of Lost Speedways on Peacock. They're looking at great racing cathedrals of the past. Really long forgotten race courses now abandoned or overtaken by nature. I really loved it. Thought it was great. And we were going to have Junior on to talk about that. But then I thought everything that he went through when he was racing, from when his dad died to getting in the car the next week, the expectations, you inherited a fan base, he wasn't winning, just the mental side of that. And Dale Jr. joins us now. And I know it's a long time ago, but that mental part of preparing for a race, how many times do you think you went into a race where mentally you weren't in a good place?
Well, when you're doing it every single week, you certainly had your good days and bad days when you know, you could tell where you were last week mentally and where you were this week. And it was happening in such a repetitive, you know, process that there were days when you got up and you felt really great. You felt like, man, this is going to be a great day. I can feel it. Or, you know, you had a great disposition and could handle adversity better. And then there were days when you got up out of bed and you had no motivation or you had no confidence. You maybe had something going on in your personal life that had you down and depressed. And then when you were faced with any adversity during that day or that race, you didn't handle it well and you didn't overcome it. And, you know, you kind of fell apart. You're definitely going to experience that in sports. When you're competing on a regular basis, you're going to have those days when you mentally just have it together. And then those moments when there's just, you just seem, you're just overwhelmed. And I was always affected, you know, my personal life and my home life was, you know, the driving factor for me. And so if things were good and I, you know, I was, and things were smooth for me at home, things were going to go pretty well at the racetrack. I think that might've been the other way around too. Sometimes if things didn't go well at the racetrack, things went bad at home. That's for sure. If I failed, and I had stretches of failure, you know, where just, I was a miserable person every day of the week.
But how many times did you get into a car and say, I shouldn't be in this car?
I never did that. It was a job, you know. I was just showing up to work and supposed to be there, felt like I belonged there. But there were days when you looked around and you just knew you didn't have that same confidence as the guy next to you. So when we go to the driver's introduction, all the drivers are forced into this little space together and we're going to get introduced to the crowd. And so you are exposed to all the competition right there in that moment before you're going to go compete. And you can see guys that are ready to get after it. And you can see guys that are just, you know, they're not up on the chip. They're not fired up to be there. I don't know. Everybody kind of approaches it differently, but,
can you say anything to anybody?
What do you mean?
Like, could you tell your crew chief, or, like, you have doubts, or, hey, I'm just not there, or like, did you just suppress it?
Yeah, you wouldn't want to say that because you don't want your team to hear it, or you didn't want your crew chief or anybody to think that you weren't logged in, you know, and you weren't there. Everybody, you know, most sports, racing is a team effort, and you definitely don't want, you know, your personal issues or anything you got going on, I guess, were, you didn't, you know, that wasn't the Jackman's problem. He showed up, he's there, he's plugged in, he's prepared all week. And so you suppressed it and didn't say anything. Now, after the race, you might go up to your crew chief and say, hey, man, I'm sorry. As you could probably tell, I wasn't with it this week, or I wasn't with it today. This is why. I'm going to try to fix that. How can you help me fix that? And, you know, you try to do a better job the next week.
But you had a big fan base. Did, like, the pressure at a young age of living up to what they wanted. The other drivers didn't have that. You can say that's good and bad, but like, you didn't want to let them down.
No, you didn't. And, you know, I had a hard time feeling like a victim there, because I felt like that fan base was super, that fan base was absolutely the reason why I was able to keep my job in certain situations when probably the next guy would have got fired. There was a stretch when I was going, things were going pretty bad with my job at Rick Hendrick. And anyone else would have got let go, but my fan base and the support that I had from the fans is the reason why I wasn't let go. And so, you know, being that most popular driver, that saved my butt a few times in my career. And, you know, and I was able to turn around and get back to victory lane, do all that. But, knowing that it was this blessing, I kind of felt guilty to ever look at the, you know, that pressure as a bad thing or something that I didn't want to have, because that, you know, that support from those fans was the same thing that was keeping me going and keeping me in the seat at certain points in my career.
You didn't ever think about just pulling in pit row and then just getting out of the car and just walking away?
No. I mean, certainly may have thought about it a time or two. I mean, there was some, I tell you, I mean, to be quite honest, Dan, when we went to Rockingham after Dad died, I mean, I didn't want to run that race. I didn't want to be at home by myself either. You know, I wanted to be at the racetrack and I wanted something to occupy my mind. But
and that's a week after your father died.
Yeah. So he died, and then next weekend we're at Rockingham, and I didn't want to be home, not racing. That probably would have been a miserable realization when they drop the green flag and you're not out there. Like, oh, this was a bad idea. I should have been in that race. But I certainly didn't. I wasn't getting up that morning going, man, I'm looking forward to this. I just needed to be at the track. I really didn't want to be behind the wheel. But, I mean, it was, you know, the next couple of weeks down the road, that emotion goes away. And there were certain times in the windless droughts and the struggles when I would walk, you know, I wouldn't really feel it on race day. You know, every day you get up and get in the car, you're thinking this is the day it could turn around. If I get in this car, this might be the day it goes right. But on Monday, after it didn't go right, I'd walk into the office and talk to my sister or somebody and say, I'm done with this. This is not fun. I'm not having any fun. I don't want to do this anymore. But the machine was so big, it was going right. I can't stop it.
You were a brand.
I was right. You can't just. I couldn't stop it. Right. Even if I wanted to stop it, I couldn't get off that train. It took me moving parts. And it's probably best, you know, that I didn't have that choice. It's probably best I didn't have control. You know, of that decision, because I would have probably made the wrong decision in that moment. But it was. Whatever, I'm glad I stuck it out, you know, because I did get back to winning some races and was able to kind of have some great moments.
Sorry I got a little heavy with you, but
yeah, it really got heavy.
Your dad would have been 70 in April.
My gosh, yeah.
What would he be doing?
I hope that he would be spending a lot of time with my wife and my kids. And, cause I feel like that he would have really loved Amy. And, I just really wish that I could have seen them two interact with each other, over lunch or whatever, you know, and certainly wish that I could watch him, you know, play with my kids so I imagine he would be doing all those things. I don't know what he'd be doing professionally and what he might have his involvement in, probably his car dealership or I don't know whether he would still be a team owner in NASCAR. Probably so. He'd probably have some pretty big influential position in NASCAR, whether it's on the ownership side or in the industry itself, or, you know, managing the direction of the sport. But, at 70 years old, I'd hope that he would be slowing down and enjoying the family that he's got, you know, all his grandkids.
He wouldn't be on a dirt track on a Saturday night, would he?
No, he wouldn't. He would left that way behind in the 70s when he moved up into the Cup Series. I don't think he would have ever – he might have done a one-off here and there to entertain some folks, but I think once he was going to be finished with racing in the Cup Series that he would probably be done for good.
The season two of Lost Speedways on Peacock, as you look back on, you know, some of these long forgotten race courses abandoned or overtaken by nature. And I watched one a couple of weeks ago. I thought it was great. You're like the Anthony Bourdain of racetracks.
Where oh, man. You That's just, a great compliment.
And I want you to take it that way. You're not a NASCAR driver, former NASCAR driver. I mean, you're a good host, and you present it in a way that you're truly excited about what you find, what you discover, what you unearth. I mean, it's archaeological digs that we're finding with these racetracks, and it's enjoyable. You don't have to be a NASCAR fan. It's just about history. You're talking about people and places, and it's really well done.
Well, thank you. There's a We produce it at Dirty Mo Media, which is a business that we started here, a production company that we created. And there's an interest in all of us with the abandoned and the, you know, things that are lost or left behind to be discovered again. We are all sort of interested in those things. And I know I get people laugh when I use this analogy, but I remember when they were looking for the Titanic for years and they were never going to find it. It was an impossible task to discover where this thing was at. And they looked for it for decades. And finally, you know, when they found it, I remember when I was a kid and seeing the images of this thing. And I mean, it just evokes so much interest and curiosity. We were all curious. Heck, we're still curious about that discovery. And it's sort of the same thing, you know, but it's in my little world of racing where we go back to these tracks and we only go to the places where there's evidence, where you can actually see what the track looked like or the imprint of the track into the surface of the ground. And it's fun to really understand what they meant to those communities, the people that experienced the good times and when the tracks were thriving. And I'm not saying this because we're here together, but if I get any credit on my hosting abilities or anything that I do on my interviewing abilities, I have studied you, buddy. You're one of the best. I've told you that before. And I tell everybody that, you know, when I'm working in the media side and broadcasting and so forth, that you're kind of the top of the mountain in terms of how to interview somebody. And you just do an amazing job. And so I have to say that, and I'll probably tell you that many, many more times going forward every time we're around each other. But I really appreciate you and the influence that you've kind of had on me as I've steered away from driving cars and gotten into the broadcasting side of it. It's been, you've been a really helpful person and a very supportive person to me, and you probably don't even know that.
Well, you know what I always appreciated about you, Junior, is you were willing to listen. You didn't have all the answers. And I think that's the important part when you're trying to go into this business, is you don't know, but you're willing to listen and find out. And I always appreciated that. But, it's always great to catch up with you.
Yes, sir, you too.
I feel like I'm talking to you, not interviewing you. And I appreciate your honesties always.
Yep, it's always good to talk to you too, man. And I feel the same way. Every time we've had a conversation, you almost forget we're working. But
and if I can help with the girls, I'll help. You know, you let me know. Like I got three of them.
I know you're always available, man. I know that I can text you anytime I need with that type of question.
I still love, like, Junior will send me a text and it'll be like, you know, what do I do? Like, you know, I didn't know that they could do this, or you know, she's asking me this. And I think you got to do a show on fatherhood. Would Amy do a reality show on fatherhood?
I don't know. She might. It'd be an interesting experience, I'm sure.
She's the crew chief.
Oh yeah, for sure. With two girls, with two little girls, absolutely. She's in control, and I'm there to help. I'm another set of hands to sort of.
You're just changing lug nuts. That's all you're doing.
I'm just a picture at this point.
Good luck with the show. Always great to talk to you, Junior. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
Take care.
Good to talk to you, buddy.
Dale Junior.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
The utterly inspired all-electric EQE sedan from Mercedes-Benz. With hundreds of customizable comfort settings inside the cabin, it's the EV that recharges you. The vehicle is all electric. The feeling is all Mercedes. Learn more at mbusa.com/EQE.
All right, everybody, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. I know what you're saying. Flag on the play. You've already talked about that. But there's just so much more good stuff in this game. In Monopoly Go, you can team up with friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. The more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock.
And there's so much more to get. You can get unique stickers. You could trade with friends to compete albums for big prizes. There's cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with. I was always a battleship guy. You know, you get those pieces, like there was the hat, there was the shoe.
Oh, same.
There was the, I was always a battleship guy or the car. You know what, too, is funny about a battleship? It's one of the only Monopoly pieces that you find that's not just a household item.
Wow, you know, I mean, even thought about that.
Yeah, most people don't have a battleship at home, but you have a car, you have a hat, you have a shoe, you have all those things. Anyway, you could also get hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults. That's always fun. Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges. A ton include their own unique mini games like digging for treasure or a robot Pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that will help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it for free right now on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.